Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much.
I'm not listening right now, but I think I have a little problem with my headphones, but I can hear you right now.
No,
now I can hear you.
Now you can hear me?
Okay. Now I
now
can
you
hear
can
you
hear me?
Fine. Yes.
But I can't hear him. Mr. Man, I cannot hear him. Okay, can you hear me now?
I can.
I cannot hear him. I cannot hear him. Well, I cannot hear him. Just a second. Just a second, my friend. We're trying to figure it out. I cannot hear him at all.
Yeah, I'm. I can't
oh,
hear
okay.
you.
Okay, but... I hear him now. I hear you now. What's
okay.
But we have no idea. Okay. You know, I have a feeling that we have some ghosts in the house, too. It's just an incredible evening. I'm not sure what is going on with the wires, but somehow they're getting crossed, and Mr. Matt could hear him, but we're using the same type of headphones. So whatever is going on, but you had issues too. So it doesn't matter. We're starting the show. I was just mentioning to you guys that at the beginning of the show, you guys heard the Guadarrama theme song. We have Paul Thomas and Bobby Moon from the Spellbound Band in California to thank for that. We did a show with them two shows back. So if you want to check them out, go ahead and do that on Guadarrama Block Talk Radio as well. This evening, you guys, Dino Castillo is in the house. Dino Castillo
yeah,
is in the
I'm
house.
So
Buena Vista Social Club, the Legacy Band Showcase right here on Guadarrama. Who is Dino Castillo, you guys ask? He's an Afro-Cuban jazz percussionist, the singer. We are going to be discussing his newest project, the Showcase, the Buena Vista Legacy Band. We're going to explore this phenomenon. What is it about the album that was recorded back in 1996 that led to so many documentaries and even this large cult following? You guys are going to hear all about it tonight. His background includes an honorary degree in percussion, teaching from George Gershwin Conservatory in Ecuador, a degree in percussion studies from the Caturla Conservatory and the Felix Varela Conservatory, and many private lessons, including studies with Cuban artist Oscar Valdez. Gino has also served as the head percussion teacher for the Instituto de Música Contemporánea from Universidad San Francisco de Quito, which is part of the Berklee College of Music Network. You guys, this man is very well-rounded. I am, you know, before the show started and we had a little bit of the issues with, I was already nervous. My heart was beating, and as I was reading his bio, and we've been friends for a while, but oh my God, reading his stuff all over again. Since 2003, Gino has maintained his symbol sponsor with Sabian, becoming the first Ecuadorian musician to be sponsored by a worldwide brand. So you guys know he's got what it takes. Good evening, my friend. How are you doing?
I'm so honored to be here.
I can't hear him
so
again,
happy.
Mr. Man. I'm not sure if he's talking. Well, I cannot hear him.
Yeah. That's a weird thing. And now can you hear me?
I cannot hear him at all.
And now?
I heard him say now, but I don't know where I am.
And now? I am right there. Can you hear me now?
Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, I was saying that it's a big honor to be back and talking to you after so many years, but I'm so happy to be able to share all the music that I have been doing.
Yes, I can hear you. I can't hear him now. What's going on?
Delayed. Did you call him?
I cannot hear him at all. Even if it's delayed,
okay.
I cannot hear
him. He maybe something about
okay.
My head.
Okay, Gino, I am so sorry, my friend. We are going to go ahead and we're going to end the show and restart it. Okay, we're going to end the show, you guys, and restart. So, I don't know, is that going to give me a new link? No, it's not going to give us a new link. Go ahead, hang up, and, he can stay on?
Can you hear
you
me now?
You go ahead and stay on, Gino. We are going to reconnect to the show. So, go ahead and stay put, my friend. Go ahead and stay put. We're going to be right back, everybody. So, sorry. What is going on tonight? Not sure what it is, but... for some reason, we're connected. And
I am here. Can you hear me now? I'm not listening to anything at all right now.
We had.
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you. Can you hear me now?
Okay. Yes, I hear you perfectly.
Thank you, Lord. Okay, we're back on the air, you guys. Okay, we're going to go ahead and edit the show so when you guys hear it again, it's going to sound much, much better. So go ahead and tell us all about this Buena Vista Legacy Band project. Who came up with this idea?
Well, that's an idea that it was at the beginning. As I said, I think I sent you the movie that we made about it. This is my good friend Charles Carmody, who is the director of the Charleston Music Hall and the theater in the Charleston. And he called me one day and I say, I have an idea. Why don't we do a concert, a tribute to the Buena Vista Social Club? And I was like, and he said, we're just the local guys. And I said, I don't know if that's something I want to put my time to do one concert tribute with just local musicians. And it will take a lot of time just to put it together. And I was like, I wasn't that excited about. And he said, like, what do you think going to make you be excited? And I said, if we can bring some musicians that actually played with the Buena Vista band, my friends from Cuba. And he said, okay, let's do it. So we started that, those connections with the friends that we had an idea at first with one of the members, actually the older guys, but was hard to put it together, mostly logistic things. And then we got in touch with my good friend Oliver Valdez, who is actually also in the next movie that Dean Bender did called Los Hijos de Cuba. And Oliver is one of the biggest drummers in the Cuban world in Havana. And we had also invited Julito Padron, who is one of the most well-known trumpet players, and he played with the African All Stars, with Omar Portondo, with Buena Vista Social Club. Also, Oliver played with them. And but at some point, and of course, when we were talking about that, we thought in USA, who is also a huge star on the Cuban War and plays this Cuban instrument called tres, which is one of the most signature instruments in the Cuban music. So when we start talking about that, then is when the idea for me was just like an amazing idea. And as much as I was working on the project and putting it together and working on all the logistics and music and rehearsals, I was thinking more and more that I like so much that idea that I want to make a permanent band. And so then we came up with the idea to film the concert and do a little kind of like movie concert about that. And so then the whole idea came up and went together, and everybody was so excited about playing all this traditional music that, as you said, it started in 1960s with the movie and became a culture.
So let me hear, if we hear you right. So there was a film. So you created this new band with some of the original musicians that were in the Buena Vista Social Club album, the original album, and they
with some of the musicians that played with the band during the years. You know, I'm much younger than, so
that's right.
The younger
that's
musicians
right.
that played with them on tour, we are contemporary in some ways. Yeah,
you're right.
I'm not 90 something yet. I'm close to that, but not that much.
Oh,
so
my
some
friend.
Of my friends in Cuba that, you know, during the years they went on tour as the side musicians with the Buena Vista or with the original members or did another recording. So I play with them and we have projects and they've been playing with me in different projects too. And I talked to them that it will be nice if they can do this as part of this. It's basically a tribute band, but you
right,
know we kind of like move a little bit forward to put some of the. We didn't want to just copy the music and play around, which is usually tribute bands. They try to be as close to the original they can, but we
right.
thought that we just want to play that music that. A bunch of people play the traditional music. That's why, you know, it's like old music that is being played forever. And, of course, Buena Vista Social Club make it, please put it in the world. Music that people was forgotten and musicians that were forgotten too. And suddenly became the superstars of the Cuban music in the world. And we thought that it would be a nice thing to do a tribute to them and honor them and thank them, because if they didn't do what they did, I believe that Cuban music won't be in the world as is right now.
You know, I know for a fact that most people around the world have no idea what is Cuban music. And especially when I introduce you as an Afro-Cuban continent, and they say, but wait a minute, Afro and Cuban and jazz, give us a little history. How does all of this, you know, combine together to form the mixture of sounds that makes people want to play and want to hear and dance to this kind of music, as you say, hundreds of years later? Because, you know, sometimes you guys, you have to excuse me when I was speaking to Gino, and I was saying, well, is this with some of the musicians? Sometimes we know a lot, believe me, there's Cubans that are 101 years old. They're still around and they're still singing and playing. So it wouldn't
yeah.
be, it would, it wouldn't be an odd thing, and I had to laugh because it wouldn't be odd for you to have met one of these people and for them to actually have been in a band with you. I know for a fact that there's a lot of very, very old people still around. Besides the fact that it was 101 degrees here in Minnesota today, and my brain is a little fried, but the age difference, we hear this music, though, Gino, since I was a little girl. So sometimes we don't even, you know, it's like when you grow up with a certain music and then you listen to it all your life and you age with it, it's almost like the Beatles for Americans.
Definitely.
You know what I'm saying? We don't think we're getting old.
Absolutely.
We're just, yeah. So this is the fun part of it.
I grew up listening boleros in my grandmother's radio when I was a little kid. And now I am singing those boleros in my shows.
Wow.
You know, it's like, it's music that is there.
Yes.
So, yeah, well, you know, the Afro-Cuban jazz, as you said, is that kind of started with Mario Bauza and Machito and the Afro-Cubans in New York when they were putting together bands in the beginning of the 20th century. They were putting together bands to play the music with a big band. So they had that big band sound that was a characteristic for the American big bands, but they were playing Cuban music and mambo music with that arrangements as a big band. But the language and the music was still Cuban, you know, like very Cuban, very important, very strong with the Cuban music and the Cuban rhythms that they were coming from, the rumba style and the song, the traditional Cuban song. But the language on the improvisations and the solos were still as traditional Cuban. So, but I think that is the beginning of the Cuban jazz sound. It's coming when Mario Bauza and Machito and his Afro-Cubans were playing this kind of music at the time. But I believe that changed when Dizzy Gillespie met Mario Bauza, and they start talking about all those arrangements, the percussion. Dizzy Gillespie got crazy with that, and he said, I would like to have percussion in my band. So he introduced Chano Pozo to Dizzy Gillespie, and then is when things changed, because they composed the songs called Manteca. It's actually a Chano Pozo's idea, and if you see a documentary, it is going around about Dizzy Gillespie. He said that, you know, the Chano didn't know how to write music, and he didn't even spoke English. And he came with the idea, singing the melodies of everything, the whole arrangement he had in his head. So Dizzy was writing that arrangement, and then he put more music and the jazz language into the song. And in my opinion, that's something that somebody maybe don't agree, but in my opinion, that was the first Latin jazz, Cuban jazz song reading between Chano Pozo and Dizzy Gillespie. And I believe that Dizzy, with all the fame he had at the time, you know, he was already the inventor of the bebop. So he made a big revolution into the jazz world that was the mainstream music at the time. And he came up with this Cuban music into the jazz world. And I truly believe that he kind of created the Cuban jazz at the very beginning. Of course, after him, all the huge superstars on the world have been playing Cuban jazz and developing. But I think that's kind of like the beginning of this thing.
Yeah, wonderful. You know, we have a caller. Let me take this call because they may have a comment on something that you are saying right at the moment.
Good evening.
Good evening. You're on the air.
I want to say I was listening to your guests. I was going through the programs, and I found this one to be interesting. I'm from New Orleans, Louisiana. I'm in New Orleans, where I'm from. And, of course, I traveled to Cuba. One of my grandmothers was from Cuba. She's a black Cuban who came to New Orleans in 1920s. So I wanted to ask your guest, is he familiar with Alexi Marti, who's a black Cuban percussionist here in New Orleans, and Ned Sublett, who's a writer in New York who has written a massive book on Afro-Cuban rhythms and the history of the music up until the 1940s.
Wow, great question.
Oh, well, I'm just like having chills right now because Alex A. Marti was my first conga teacher.
Okay.
Okay. He's a really good friend. He's a good friend, amazing percussionist, amazing composer. I was a drummer before I became a percussionist. And I was taking lessons with a Cuban drummer, Oscarito Valdez. And Oscarito Valdez had a band with his dad, Oscar Valdez, because Oscar was a conga player, percussionist with Iraquere for 20 years. And and then they separate, and he started their own band. It was called Diacara. And at that time, I was taking drums lessons with Oscarito. And Alexei was part of the crew of Diacara. So I was, at that time in maybe 1995, I was in touch with Alexei maybe 4 or 5 days a week on the rehearsals and when I was having lessons. So when one day Oscar, which was actually who convinced me to quit playing drums and start playing congas, when he convinced me, Alexei was the first person to teach me my basic technique, which actually I'm so grateful because I'm kind of proud of the technique that I developed thanks to him.
Okay, okay. Are you familiar with Ned Sublett out of New York? He's written, he's a musician, but he goes to Cuba a lot. He takes these tours called, he calls them the Mambo Seminars or something, but he's an author. And he wrote this book about Cuban music. I was wondering, were you familiar with him?
Actually, not. And I used to live in New York for a little bit, but I don't know him. But it would be nice to meet him and to know about him.
Let me give you the name of this book that he wrote. Let's see here. I'm okay. The book is called Cuba and Its Music. From the First Drums to the Mambo. He published that in 2007. And he goes all into the history of the different African groups being brought, the Cabildos, which were the organization based off the different ethnic groups there. And I just thought maybe you had been familiar with him. And lastly, I just want to say one of the things that intrigues me is when we were talking about jazz. And
yeah.
What I'm learning is that the relationship between, let's say, U.S. black musicians and the musicians of blacks, let's say, out of Cuba and Puerto Rico, that, you know, that goes back at least maybe to the turn of the 20th century. Because, you know, when many of those Puerto Ricans came to the mainland, particularly the ones that were black, obviously, and brown, they served in World War One with the black units, you know, during World War One, American blacks served under French command. And so
we had
musicians and people like, I think, Rafael Hernandez, I think is his name, was well-known Puerto Rican people. They were in the segregated units with the blacks. You know.
Wow.
Yeah, what I think it happens on the history at that point, I just believe this, for stories that I hear, that many Latino musicians, Cuban, Puerto Ricans, also Mexicans, were, because the war was part of the unit, and they were playing jazz, and after the war, they were playing with the big band jazz, with the jazz bands, but they were playing jazz music, you know, it's like, wasn't really happening that they introduced their own music into the jazz, those jazz bands. That didn't happen until those things, big things happened in New York and in Cuba with Dizzy Gillespie.
Okay, okay. Thank you. I will continue to listen and join the show. Thank you so much.
Sure.
Thank
let
you
us
so
know
much.
If you have any more comments. You can let us know. You know, this is really, really interesting. It's fun that he mentioned about the blacks and the turn of the century and World War One. While you were talking and prior to him calling, I had actually made some notes, and this was kind of interesting when you were talking about the mambo and the rumba, traditional sounds with machito. I wrote the word amistad, and I don't know if you're familiar with the movie Amistad that was made about Cuba being the center of it seemed to be a port where slaves were dispersed throughout the world at one time. Have you seen the movie?
I haven't seen the movie, but I know the story about.
Right, and so my thoughts were as you were speaking, and I'm listening. Growing up in Cuba myself, and I'm listening to this music, and then moving to the United States when I was 10 years old, and just listening to music all around the world, and listening to specifically black musicians. What do you think makes black Cuban musicians different from all the other black musicians around the world? Because I think the sound, and you can correct me if I'm right or if I'm wrong, is it different? I find that Cuban music is completely different.
My experience being raised in Cuba is that as long as I was over there, we never thought as a black musician or a white musician.
Right.
We always thought there as a Cuban musician. In my experience, of course, racism, it is everywhere. But
right.
My experience, I want to say my personal experience, it wasn't that is like, oh, you are black, you play different, you're white, you play different. Actually,
right.
What I've been experiencing in the whole world is like, oh, you're Cuban. If you're Cuban, you can play this. And if you are not Cuban, you cannot. Doesn't matter if you're black or white. Actually, right now, one of the biggest rumba singers, which is, if you want to put a tag, rumba is the black music. One of the best rumba singers in Cuba now is white, so it is well respected in the whole. I don't think it is being a black Cuban or white Cuban musician what makes the difference. I think it is all the things that being put together in the island geographically and
yes.
historically, and the mix
yes.
between the Spain and Africa.
Yes.
And also I believe it has to do with which region in Africa stayed in Cuba more
right.
than what happened in the U.S. or people who went to Brazil, which is different.
Right.
You know, it is not the same approach. But I think it has to be with all the cultural thing and the regional thing and historically thing happening that makes different. Also, you can say that musicians in New Orleans are different than the rest of the world. Nobody can play second line like the New Orleans drummer. Even if the best of the world from Germany, maybe he's amazing, and he will know the rhythm, but he won't play it as good as anybody on a band in New Orleans or playing samba in Brazil. You know, it's the same thing like playing Cuban music. I think it's the same kind of thing.
Right. Well, the reason why I asked, and I think you did touch on it, you know, when I say about Amistad and that being a hub, I just don't want to ignore the fact that Cubans, black blacks came to Cuba, and from Cuba they went all over the world. And this is how people are dispersed. And then, you know, and of course Cubans have migrated or exiled, and, you know, people from all over the world try to leave a bad situation for a better situation. But my question was not so much about racism, because I know that does exist, and Latinos don't have the same kinds of, we can talk about the differences without ever even feeling an ounce of what that other thing is, which, you know, in America they call it racism. We don't see, and a lot of people say, oh, you don't see color. We really don't see color. There is no color in music. But my question was gearing towards, you know, what is the difference between the way Cubans were, black Cubans were treated, as the way blacks were treated all around the world, and how that may have influenced them in playing music. And by the way, let me bring a caller in again. I think we have another caller. Might be our friend from New Orleans, because he loves our show. Good evening. You're on the air.
Yeah, this is me again. I'm just enjoying the intellectual discussion music. Yeah, what I like to contribute to the discussion, that the question you asked about black Cuban musicians.
Yes.
You know, in Cuba, the Spanish allowed the different ethnic groups to organize in what was called cabildos. Now, they were able to practice their particular ethnic group rhythm. So the Yoruba people, which were referred to as Lukumi, and then you had the different Congo people, et cetera, et cetera. Now, the reason why the Spanish allowed that is because if there was some sort of concern about a conspiracy of a slave revolt, they knew who the leaders were. That was that strategy. But when we look at, so Cuba, I think, is that it preserved a lot of the African rhythms in conjunction with the Spanish guitar, the Spanish decimas, and the different African cultural elements just produce a very intoxicating sound, you know. Now, there's a rhythm that scholars call, if I'm not mistaken, the habanero rhythm. Now, that's just a Spanish word. But really, that rhythm really was a type of beat that you heard from the Congo-influenced groups. Because in the second line beat is that habanero sound. And if you go to the coastal areas of South Carolina, the Gullah people, you will hear that same beat in that Gullah clap that you hear in what we call the second line beat in New Orleans. Now, a writer here, Freddie Evans, wrote a book about Congo Square. Actually, she wrote two books about Congo Square. And she actually identified that. So sometimes we would read scholars or people give rhythms, African rhythms, Spanish names. But those rhythms at the core were those African rhythms. So many of the same African ethnic groups were brought all over the Americas, particularly from that Angola area. They came in the largest number. So you had some of the same people in all of these areas that were brought. And so we find some of the most influential music, the music coming from the United States by African Americans, the music by black Cubans, the music by black Brazilians, and in latter time, we get the music developed by black Jamaicans in what we call ska, then they call it whatever, then you get reggae. I think those four types of population groups of blacks probably have had the most global impact on music, even impacting Africa itself, to where they develop a modern musical sound based off the rhythms that the diaspora in Africa was created from original African sounds.
It's so amazing how united we are. It seems like we are far away because of, you know, the distance in the world. But when you talk about music and you talk about talent and skills and wanting to play and wanting to create sounds, I can only imagine what the world was prior to music, prior to even having language. Just being a human and trying to communicate with another human if you had never seen a human, and imagine what sounds the very first humans that created music, what that must have sounded like. I can't even, you know, I can't even imagine.
And I want to say to my friend in New Orleans that you're absolutely right. And the only two things that I would like to say about it is that I live in Charleston, South Carolina. And if some one of my best friends here is Quentin Baxter from the band Ranky Tanky, a Charlestonian drummer and Golem musician. And he said once, when I just moved down here, I was trying to fusion Cuban music with Golem music. And I said, why you don't play some kind of like second line rhythm there? And he said, because I don't play second line. I play gula, and it's not the same. It's similar, but it's not the same. He said with love, but he was teaching me there. You know, I know what you mean, but I was thinking while you were saying that, like, he will say something in right now, like, to make a difference.
Yeah.
That it's
well,
like,
right. If you go to YouTube and you look at gullah claps, there's a clap that they would do.
Yeah.
Particularly maybe like
yeah,
when they were saying folk songs or certain, that's the second line beat. That's the same beat.
Yeah. It's like we call in Cuba will be the clave, and the second line have the same clave with the gola music and with the Bayon music in Brazil from Bahia.
Mm.
It's exactly the same pattern. It's the same pattern that you do.
Absolutely. Oh. The Spanish referred to it as the tecillo. They were using those words, tecillo, and something like that, right?
Yeah, it's kind of like, but we were talking, you know, I did a video here in Charleston. The song is called Cha-Cha Charleston. So if you want to check it out, that on YouTube, and you put Cha-Cha Charleston Gino, and you will see that. So that is the cha-cha-cha that I did brought for Charleston with several musicians from the city. But at the end, we turned that into a gola song.
Okay. I will continue to listen on the computer. Thank you all so much. I'm enjoying the show.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you for calling. I absolutely love you guys. The callers, they fill us with information, things that I don't even know. Okay, Gino, let's hear one of your songs so we can put everybody in the mood and we can listen to some of the Cuban sounds that we've been talking about. What would you like to hear?
Awesome.
I know you send me a lot of music. You go ahead and pick the one that you want
listeners
to.
We were talking about our friend was talking about the music that why the music is preserved in Cuba with the Spanish and the Cabildos. Ah, that's something that I want to add to that, too. People refer to one of the Cuban Africans that came. They call, and it's been called like that, Lucumi. And people think that Lucumi is a person from somewhere, a specific place that people call the Lucumis. But actually, Lucumi is not a word. It's a word that people used to use at that time, African ethnicities from different cities. That was a word like saying what's up and between ethnicities, because they talk different languages, but something that they had in common was like saying Lucumi. And it wasn't actually Lucumi, but sounds like a Lucumi and turned out into Lucumi. So the Spanish used to call the Lucumis because they hear everybody saying Lucumi, Lucumi, and became even in a cultural study, people talk about the Lucumis. So because we were talking about that, I was thinking that one of the main reasons to preserve for the Africans was the necessity to preserve their culture and their religion, the Yoruba religion, the Osha religion, and the Ifa religion that came up a little bit later. So as you said that, I would like to play one of the songs that I did in the pandemic project that I was doing. I wrote a song to celebrate unity, first of all, because into the Yoruba religious world, it is not that much unity that I will like. I can feel that there's some separation in between the religion, that actually we are all religious part of the same. So I decided to do this song to ask one of the deities from the Yoruban pantheon, the Babaluwaye, that have different names on the diaspora and Africa also, but it's called Babaluwaye. And I decided to write this song to celebrate him and to ask him, because he's one of the gods, for help. So to ask help for the world. And I invite 45 musicians or more around the world to sing, and I include one, the opening is one African in Nigeria, Baba Lao, singing with all his god songs. And then we have several people playing, just to play this celebration to Babaluwaye. So if you have that song, that's called Adimu Babalu, that would be great to hear.
Okay, there we go. We'll be right back, everybody. Enjoy. Adimu Babalu.
Oh,
Wow. Hearing like, oh my goodness, I think the connection was getting weird again. Can you hear me, my friend? Do you know what it is?
I can.
I think it's these headphones. No, something was acting up. Okay. How many musicians did you say were on this project, this particular song?
You know, it's like 40-something.
Wow.
I can't even remember the number. It started as an idea, and I wrote this song like years ago, and I did just like kind of demo, and I'd upload it, and I left it there with a, you know, very bad version. But this version, I talked to my friend Oliver and Julito Padron and Rafael Paseiro and my good friend Yusa. Actually, Yusa is living now in New Orleans. I told them, like, will be nice to do this song. Yeah, and they said, yeah, let's do it. So I started sending to Oliver and then to Paseiro. They live in Cuba. And they sent me back some tracks, and then we sent it to do the piano in France to another Cuban piano player, Piti Cabrera, who lives in France. And then they sent back, and Julito did the trumpets in Cuba and his improvisation on the vocals. And then we start adding people doing background vocals, doing some things here, some things there. And a lot of people just decided to join us. And we did a video of that song that the Babalao from Nigeria said, I will send you one from my house with my godsons. Wow. And my godfather and his son and brother are one of very well-recognized bata players and priests in Havana. They did too. It was a beautiful thing. From New York, Roman Diaz did some bata. In Virginia, did another friend, another bata. I think like Norway, all over the world. At the very end, we put some traditional Afro-Ecuadorian marimba style playing there. And there's a group there playing and singing some parts. So it's like it's so many people that I was so blessed to have them on this song that came up really beautiful, but because all what they did there, you know.
I'm just astounded as the amount of musicians that you know, that you are connected with, that you work with, because I know I've worked with musicians for years, and oftentimes it takes a lot of work to get everybody on the same page. Your project seems like, I mean, everybody's on the same page. How do you find people that are so willing and do it? How do you find good musicians like that all over the world that do what you do and that are committed to the project? If somebody is listening, there is an up-and-coming musician, and they want to know what are the qualities that it takes for someone to be looked at and even considered for a project like yours?
Well, I think that the main reason for me is that I put a lot of passion in what I do. Mm-hmm. I believe in what I want to do. I don't think what I do is the best in the world. I just think that I put all my heart on it. And I just want to put some love in the music and share love. So I think that when I talk to my friends, because I believe that, first of all, I want to be a friend with people. You know, it's like, it doesn't matter if you're the best cello player in the world or you are my friend who lives next door who clean houses for a living. It's all about love and loving people. What makes me value somebody is not what you do or how much money you have, or it's who you are. So I think that my friends joined the project when I decided and called them to do things, because I really love to do things with them for love. And they understand that as, like, I usually don't make money with the projects, but I am a rich person because I have all these people working with me. And, you know, exactly, Willing to share their beautiful talents and amazing talents. with me and some musical projects. So it's like, I think it's about being honest with what I want to share with the world on music. I don't know. I haven't really put a thought in that. I put a thought in how lucky I am mm-hmm. and blessed I am of having all these people that are my friends. That's something I really think in that all the time. And I'm grateful every day because I have all these people around that are willing to listen to me with sometimes my crazy ideas. But I think it's just like doing it, you know, like I think it's like, you know, I'm on a music path for a long time. I'm not a young guy, and I don't think that I'm the most talented guy, but I think that I have a good eye to put things together with. And another thing that I'm on my path is I am becoming a Yoruba priest, and I'm reading a lot and learning a lot about what that really meant to be. And wow. It's two things that, and the other song that I send you this for, Orumila, I have a chorus there that it says a couple words that really resonate from the whole Ifa world that I'm studying now, that says being humble and be patient. And I'm taking that very serious because people,
wow.
you know, it's very common to hear people saying, I am humble. But mm-hmm. you really not, you know, it's like it's kind of a pose now mm-hmm. saying that you're humble. And I'm taking that very serious to really understand it, trying to understand what is the real meaning of being humble, mm-hmm. to don't have like that fake side of being humble or to don't think that I'm nobody because I want to be humble mm-hmm. and being patient. So I think because of that too makes me try to understand better what people, when somebody don't want to do something or want to do something in the music. I think like music is one of the most beautiful things in the world and to heal and to drive you places, mm-hmm. but also to heal your soul. And we need a lot of that. So I think that's, I don't know, maybe it has to do with that, just trying to be a better human being will help.
You know, I think you're right. I think that because you said it when you mentioned friends, when you have good people around you and people who are not jealous or envious of the work that you do, and then the fact that you are working yourself on a spiritual path, not that everybody has to do anything spiritual, but I think that when you do things with passion, when you have a goal, and when you look around and you, like you say, you have an eye for talented people, they don't have to be the best, but they have to have the same passion and support you in the work that you do and have the same love. And sharing is the biggest part of it all, that you want to do, not necessarily, like you say, a lot of the projects that I see, many, many musicians and even filmmakers, they don't make a lot of money in the beginning. But oftentimes when things get going and more people hear about their music, they, you know, oftentimes when they are good and when they are as good as you are, Gino, the word spreads like wildfire. And what you're doing is such a wonderful thing. As you say, music therapy is an amazing thing. You guys have seen, even people who are dying of cancer, they have programs where people can come in and play guitar, sometimes it's just a single instrument. It could be, a small piano whatever they call those pianos that they take along
yeah.
with them.
Yeah.
You know, but
yeah.
I have. And sometimes it's puppies. They bring puppies to older people in nursing homes. So there's always so much that we can do with our skills and our talents to share love with the world. And as you say, heal. And what you're doing, bringing the Cuban music out into the world again. This is old stuff. This is music that a lot of you know, when we think of America in the hustle and bustle of, let's say, what was that one big ship that went down? It was that long in the 20s, wasn't it, Mr. Man? The Titanic, when the Titanic went down.
Oh, yeah.
I'm imagining that was around the time that, you know, music was really big in New York City, you know, and there were, I mean, can we imagine going back in time and how people were listening to those mambos and boleros and that kind of music in the early 1900s? And you today, this is 2020 during a pandemic, you know, you come up with, let's do this. A friend comes up with an idea and you're like, okay, this is what it's going to take. And then you guys go for it. You guys couldn't have picked like the worst time in the world, I'm thinking. But
well, actually we did that concert that became a movie. We did in October 2019.
Okay.
So it was just before we did that concert. Gosh, and the
before.
Idea we had was to do, we had a, several concerts planned for 2020, and we canceled. 99% of our concerts were canceled.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So are you going to get back out there? And because I need to know, where can people find your work today? Are they going to go on YouTube and see it, or are we?
Yeah, well, right
YouTube.
Now. Yeah, right now I did upload because, you know, the idea was to put the movie out, trying to make something bigger. And
yeah.
But with all the things that happened with the editor of the movie, a good friend from Venezuela who lives here in Charleston too, and we worked out to edit the movie. I was driving to his house in the middle of the pandemic, and
wow.
We were sitting apart, and I was sitting in the one side of his room, and he was in the other one. So he
oh
was editing,
God.
And I was like, no, let's do this here, let's do there, blah, blah, blah. So we finished the movie, and I did a little mastering for the audio. And we decided, like, you know, let's put the movie out in the middle of this crisis, because what
yeah.
it would be better for people in their houses doing nothing that
right.
open YouTube and watch this concert. So I uploaded the movie as the Buena Vista Legacy Band, and I put the whole concert online in my YouTube channel so everybody can watch it. It was actually the first, we did a live presentation there, and it was like, I think it reached like 1,500 views the same day. And then, of course, you know, YouTube have the algorithm and stuff, so it slowed down, but I'm happy with it, kind of 2,000 views that have the movie already. So we did that, and that was it. And we thought, well, what are we going to do? And then suddenly one of the jazz clubs that canceled one of the concerts in Charlotte, North Carolina, they called again last year, and they say, we have an opening because we're going to have online shows and a little bit of people there. And you want to do a concert, and then we were just jumping in one leg, like, say, yes! After 1 year without concert, we went to perform with the project in Charlotte for a 3 days show. And then we stopped again, of course. But now I just came back from Cuba last week, and I'm working on the recording. We're going to record a new album from the Buena Vista Legacy Band. We're going to do mostly boleros and the big band style. And so we are working with some musicians in Cuba and the rest of the band here in Charleston. One trumpet player is in Columbia, South Carolina. Yusa is in New Orleans right now. So we're going to work remotely. And we're going to have invited a lady from Venezuela. She actually lives in Venezuela. And I was one day watching my good friend, a singer, Pepito Gomez from New York. I was in his face. I saw in his feed that he posted a video of this lady singing karaoke in Venezuela. And she's such an amazing singer.
Wow.
She is amazing. Well, she's that amazing that I think that video reached like a million views immediately.
Oh,
and I
Lord.
Sent her a message, and I said, I would love to to have a song with you. And now we are really good friends. We talk all the time with her. And so I was just telling her like a couple days ago that we are working an arrangement for the same song that she sang in that video. And we're going to arrange that for our band, and she's going to sing. But also it's an original song, one of my original boleros. She's going to sing that on duo with me too. So we are working on this album, and it is coming together. We're going to have some surprises like Hair singing that, and I'm going to do one version of one traditional American song into the Cuban world. You know, will be like a kind of cha-cha with a translation to the Spanish. And we have another guest as our good friend Charlton Singleton from here singing one of American traditional songs that will be in the Cuban sound too and the Buena Vista style sound. But we're going to introduce a couple songs in English with the American singers as part of that. I've done things like that before with the – I did a project that's called Soul Phone Cubanized that there was just that. But now we're going to do in this Bolero album from the Buena Vista Legacy Band. We are working on it, so I hope we can finish soon to have – I'm going to put the movie – and yes. The audio from the new and the audio from the old in one package to try to put a nice big package of music for you, everybody.
My gosh. It is so good that now people are able to go out and not be as worried as they were before. Things are lifting up all over the world. So hopefully we can hear you sing and we can see you and celebrate you going on concerts. Let me ask you, since, there was a lot of talk about New Orleans tonight, have you ever played? And I've never been there, Mr. Man. I have heard so much of, in fact, before the caller tonight, I have been hearing a lot, like people have been telling me, Marta, you have to go to New Orleans. The music and the food and the culture with religion, I'm very, to me, that's just fascinating. Whenever you see movies about New Orleans, it seems like it's always it just grabs you. Have you ever played in New Orleans?
No, but I would love to do that. I haven't been there, and I have the same feeling like you have. I have to be there. Even if I would love to go and perform, but even if I just have to go for a weekend and just enjoy that, because I really want to see. You know, I live in Charleston, South Carolina, and I love my city. I'm very much in love with Charleston, but a lot of people said, like, if you love Charleston, you have to see New Orleans.
Wow. So maybe we should head down there.
Yeah.
I tell you, one day when you go, I'm going to have to go. I'm going to have to make plans, because if you go and you play, I'm going to have to watch you. Or even if you just go, we're going to have to meet and have a drink or something.
Yeah.
I can't imagine what it would be like to sit and listen to some of the stories that you have. Tell me, how did you start getting interested in Cuban music?
Well, I was a kid, and my grandmother used to hear a bunch of boleros in the radio. She had all the time. So I grew up listening to Benny More and all the Cuban boleros, basically. But then Benny was kind of like the main thing that was played in my grandmother's radio. So I was grew up as a child listening to that Cuban music. And then when I was a teenager, I kind of like, in a weird turn in my life, I moved to Cuba. And I stayed there until I got out of Cuba, being a grown up and went one divorce behind.
Oh my Lord! So you moved to Cuba and you got to experience the culture firsthand and the music and the people and living. So
it's
how long did you?
I was more than 10 years there. I basically. Wow. Came an adult living in there. You know, I went as a young teenager and I got immersed. It's more like I jumped into a lake and I went to live underneath. So So I had to adapt myself.
Yeah.
Without knowing, you know, it's like I didn't even feel when that happened. And it's just like it's weird. It is like I was being swallowed by Cuba and I was given birth again.
Oh my Lord.
That's the only explanation I can say, because there's nothing, you know, it's nothing that I can really say. Sometimes people say, how that happened? Yeah. I said, I don't know. I don't know it, but I'm grateful.
So, you know, oftentimes in America, you hear people, if they like another person's culture a lot, like you do, they say, oh, you're appropriating yourself. I find it fascinating. Whenever I hear someone tell me that they love my culture, or I hear the music of my culture, or they want to emulate anything of my culture, to me, they're like a family. They're like, okay, you're like my brother, because you're like me. You're imitating me. And to me,
actually, in my particular case, I don't think that I was imitating anything. It's like,
no.
I was a teenager, and I just became somebody who, you know what I mean? It's like, it is my kid.
Well,
something that I grow up with.
Exactly. Well, for me, is the American culture. I feel the same way. I am very much Cuban, but I love the American culture, and there's no way I could separate, you know, one. It's like having two different personalities in a way, but they're all in one.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
But I don't know if I explained it correctly. I don't mean that you want to be me or you want to imitate me, but I know that when I'm around, and it's not that I'm, you know, different. When I'm around Spanish people, I tend to be somewhat a little bit different, because we share different experiences. And even those experiences, if I try to share them with American people, it doesn't always translate the same. You know what I'm saying? Like when we're telling a joke or friends like that. But what I'm trying to say is there isn't a higher compliment that another human being can give another than to music, dancing, anything that has to do with somebody's art or their culture. If you love it and you replicate it and you take it in and you do it in your own way, which you clearly do, you're definitely not imitating anyone. You're your own person in your own right, with all the talents and the skills and the bringing together this amazing project that no one else can put it together like you can. You say you're not a perfect musician, you're not, you know, perfect this, perfect that, but no one can do Gino's job as perfect as Gino can do it. Let's hear another song, because I want people to hear that perfection in their ear. What should I play now?
Well, if you want it, we can hear this song that is called Orumila.
Yes.
That is part of the religious project that I'm doing. That project have a little bit less people, because the first one was a hard work, very, very, very hard work to put it together, because the amount of people. So we decided with the same basic band to do it with a little bit less people, but it's still a big collaboration. It is the move for Orumila and the Babalawos, part of the religion of Ifa.
Awesome. Orumila. We'll be right back.
En la tierra fue hijo de Obadalayemu, fue esposo de Ochun y Yemaya, su color amarillo y verde, y por Uigo Cheche saludo yo, al divino de los oráculos, intérprete de Ifá, vino a la tierra con los ancestros, los mexicanos de Ifá. Él sabe los secretos del monte y la humanidad. Él sabe odio lo pinchango, él se lo entregó.
Tremendous concert. Wow. So how were these two songs, how were they conceived? Were you thinking, was this like a spiritual? Are you going through a spiritual? I'm trying to understand the new project and what is your, how are you interested? How did you become interested in the religion? Is it the
Well, I was, you know, I had like several projects kind of like the same time. So one is the Buena Vista Legacy Band with the traditional Cuban music. Another one, it's my salsa band. It's called the Cuban Cowboys. I am also working on the recording to record an album with that song, with that album. And and I am working on this parallel project that is religious Yoruba project, singing for the Orishas. So when I was living in Cuba, I got interested. I was a teenager, and I was kind of curious. You know, I was living in an area called Marianao, and close to Pogoloti, where my teacher and his father was a big, you know, Oscar Valdez. Was the reason that the Chucho Valdez and the Irakere introduced the drums bata, that those drums are religious, are made to celebrate the African gods. So they introduced in Irakere those instruments and those chants, and that was long before that I was actually born, maybe 72 or something like that. They were working on it. And I was born in 74. So, but when I was immersed into that neighborhood life and percussion life, and that Diacara band, that I was full of those rhythms and instruments and chants, and the band, I can say maybe 90% of the musicians, that there were, I think, 14 musicians, and the rest of the crew were religious. It's like going to a town where everybody is Baptist, and you're growing up in a Baptist city, and more likely you're going to become a Baptist, right? If you are you don't have any denomination. I was coming from a Catholic family, but I wasn't a practitioner of a Catholic faith. I got disappointed very young in my childhood about the churches, and I decided to kind of like keep my faith for myself. So I went to grow up in this environment. And one thing that I like about my religion is that we don't try to get anybody into the religion. You know, it's like we are not telling you this is good because this, or you should come.
Right.
It is not in that way how it works at all. So I get introduced to the religion with the for the music.
Yes.
And then I start to understand a little bit. And Oscarito was a really good friend of me, and he was very religious. And he was my teacher, but also was a good friend. So I was a lot and talking about music mostly, but several times about religion. I got very interested in that until I had my first encounter with the Babalao, that he did a reading for me. And he told me some things that nobody had to know, but he knew it, and that made me believe in the veracity of the divination system that is the Ifá system. And I get more curious about and interested, and I start to believe in all the Orishas, and I was learning about the Orishas and their powers and their good things, that everything good can bring to you. And I start to embrace that. So I was very young at that time learning. And 17 years ago, I had my first initiation. And since then, I've been, you know, walking and walking. And it's one thing that happened on the religion is like, if you get a certain way that the Orisha said, you have to receive this Orisha in your head. So it's what it's called in the common word, make a santo, hacer santo.
Oh, yeah.
That is not the right word to say it, but it's like everybody knows, like hacer santo. It's like having your Orisha Lagbatori crowned in your head and receiving four more Orishas with you.
Okay.
So that is a ceremony. That is a long ceremony that takes between seven and eight days to do the ceremony to become an Iyawo, which is the 1 year stage you have before you become an Iworo, which is the youngest priest on the religion.
Is that the same thing as Santeria?
Yeah, it is Santeria. It's the wrong name, but it's the Santeria.
Oh, okay. So that is the same religion my father was in. I was just, because he always said, yo soy Santero.
Yes. You know, I try to avoid a little bit the names that they were put from the colony, because that's a name that everybody used. My godfather's using Cuba all the time. When I did my Orisha Lagbav, you know, my Cariocha, they said, well, now you are a Santero. But from the philosophical world, and more like trying to study, I've been learning that those names are actually wrong, even if everybody's using it, because it was put by the Spanish people and from the colony, because the Yoruba people took the names of the saints from the Catholic Church and started using it to cover their own saints. So they thought, okay, Oshun, it's the goddess of this and that. It has this color, as yellow as her color. So we're going to celebrate Oshun and the Day of the Caridad del Cobre, because the Spanish people, they won't say a word if we are celebrating. They were just playing their drums and singing in Yoruba the same day that Caridad del Cobre was being celebrated. So for the Spanish people,
right,
these Africans were celebrating Caridad del Cobre and not Oshun. So they put both together, and that's the syncretism is common with the Afro-Cuban religion that is started in Cuba, of course.
And you know, that was the beauty of the melting or the melding of the two cultures, the African and the Spaniard, as when our caller had talked about in the beginning, the Spanish allowed the community, the blacks in the community, to sing their songs and to do, you know, to play their drums. And I was thinking when he said that the same thing as the Spanish were allowing it, but the blacks were also doing their thing. So both were thinking, you know, we're one up on this one, right? But what they ended up doing is melting the two cultures together in such a beautiful way that,
it's actually not a really melting thing. It's like they are going hand by hand.
Right,
into their religion, you know, because the Catholic people, they weren't allowed to be hand by hand, but the Yoruba people, they use both. It is up to you. In my personal case, I tend to more to use the traditional way into the Afro-Cuban. You know, it's like I turn more to the African side of it. But in Cuba, goes hand by hand into the Yoruba world. That's exactly what happened. So that's why the Spanish started to tell them, because they were celebrating all the saints from the Catholic world. So they were the Santeros.
But
the name is coming.
Yes, the music definitely melted together the African
music.
The Spanish
Absolutely.
Music. What I'm trying to say is they both had this underground, like, hey, I got one up on you, but they didn't realize the Africans were doing their thing, the Spaniards were doing their thing, but in the midst of all this called behavior, so to speak, right? They actually created something beautiful, which is the music, what I'm trying to say.
They created beautiful culture.
Right. And the culture itself.
Definitely.
And the culture itself, because as you guys can hear, many, many Spaniards really love the African culture today, and they wouldn't have it any other way. They don't... As you said, they were disappointed with the Catholic religion, and boy, there's so much spirituality in the African religion. My dad used to do the caracoles and a lot of different things. I grew up going to those dances and listening to the music. And so when you talk about it, and I haven't been to Cuba since I left. So when you talk about it, for me, it's just, wow, you know. It's and you live in Marianao. I lived very close to you. I grew up in Parraga.
Okay. Yeah, a little bit further.
Yeah, not too far. Not too far from
Marianao. Actually, my my godmother from my santo, she's from Parraga.
Oh, it's a small world.
Yeah.
Oh, my. I am so excited tonight. Let's hear another song. We've done a lot of talking, and I know there's more that is not just – we have some religious music, but we also have – you have – when I was reading your bio, and we were talking about the George Gershwin Conservatory of Quito, I'm thinking George Gershwin is classical music, isn't it?
Well, George Gershwin was a jazz. He had a lot of standards. And actually, it's funny because like a couple of days ago, well, you know, those Facebook memories that are coming up, it came up when my good friend Julito Padron, the trumpet player from Cuba, who visited me, and we did a little tour over here like maybe 3 or 4 years ago. And I brought him because he didn't know this, that maybe you don't know either. Here in Charleston, South Carolina, it's a beach that is like 20 minutes from my house now. But I used to live over there. It's called Folly Beach. And George Gershwin, he was living in Folly Beach when he wrote Summertime and the whole opera, Porgy and Bess. So I brought Julito over there to the house. If somebody living there, it's not that you can just walk in, but we step out outside of the door and we play some music, you know, just to celebrate George Gershwin he lived there. And it was a nice thing. We just brought his trumpet and I brought my bongos and we went with my friend bass player Jake and my two kids. You know, we went to the beach, but I said we have to stop by George Gershwin's house because he wrote Summertime here, right here where I live. And but George Gershwin it was a classical musician, but he also wrote jazz music and some of the standards like Summertime. It's George Gershwin.
Amazing. You are very, very well-rounded. So let's hear another song so our listeners can get a little taste of the project this evening. What should we play?
So now you're gonna choose one.
Oh, I'm going to – okay. Let's do Candela, Buena Vista Legacy Band. Let's play it, Mr. Man.
This song's called Candela.
Candela, candela, candela me quema, yo te
holy cow. Amazing music, you guys. So, Gino, if someone is out there listening, hotels, motels, Holiday Inn, they want to hire you guys for New Year's or anytime, how do they get a hold of you?
Well, my page, my website is down, but I'm working on getting it back. By now, I have my email. It is Gino, like my name, G-I-N-O, Charleston, like the city I live, GinoCharleston@gmail.com. Or you can call me to my phone number. It's 201-668-7681.
7681. Okay. Yes. We're going to go ahead and put a little post on there so people know how to get a hold of you. Let me check and see how much time we have left of the show, about 17 minutes. And I want to make sure we get a few more. Let's do, which song did you want us to play? Because I want people to get a little bit of a flavor for what they can listen to if they've never listened to Cuban music. And if they have listened to it, they can listen to you.
Yeah, well, we did this album is more into the Cuban jazz world with the Cuban Cowboys. We did in my studio live recording that it's also a full show. It's not a show. It's like live recording on the studio, but it's the whole album live and videos is on YouTube too. And we did this version of the beautiful jazz standards called Footprints, and we did an arrangement into a cha-cha weird 7-8-6-8 combination, and we have our good friend Julito Padron playing trumpet there. My amazing musical director from Valencia, Venezuela, Abel Iriarte, is playing the piano there, and Jay Colbrenner is a bass player who is from, I always introduce him, he's a white big dude from North Dakota. So I said, from the only and unique Cuban island of North Dakota, because he played the Cuban bass amazingly. And myself playing my full set percussion set there. And it's this beautiful version of the song called Footprints. It's from Miles Davis that we did in the Cuban cha-cha version.
All right. Take it away, Mr. Man. Oh, wow. I have to tell you, Dino, the first time I listened to jazz music, I was a teenager, and I had snuck away to New York City with some friends. We went to Carnegie Hall. And we listened to some music, and I never told my mom. Now I have to confess to her because she's going to listen to this show tomorrow. I'm going to have her over, and she was telling me that she wanted to hear it. But I was just thinking as I'm listening to the music, it's like, wow, this brings me back. You and I have crossed paths because I used to live in New Jersey when I was a teenager. So growing
Where?
Up in Union City, of course.
me too.
You know, another little Cuban island.
Yeah. Not anymore, but it used to be, yes.
Right. It has changed. But so I wanted to ask you as I was listening, and it brought back memories. I thought, I wonder, have you ever played at Carnegie Hall?
I haven't played at Carnegie Hall. It's funny how life works. I'm playing now several times in Savannah Music Festival, and they have one thing that is called Musical Explorers, that it is part of the Carnegie Hall program.
Ooh.
Yeah, so, and I've been a guest a couple times in this coming year. I'm going to be their guest again for the same event that is. It's a beautiful, beautiful, beautiful thing called Musical Explorers, where you play for a whole, you play like a whole week for all the schools in the area. And that's a Carnegie Hall idea that they started in New York.
Oh, wow. So you go to different schools? I thought it's nothing like Burning Man.
No, it's actually for middle schools and for young kids. What they do is at the middle of the year, they start to teach those kids all the music that they are bringing there. And they bring the first year I was there, we had a hip hop artist, and it was an Indian music artist from New York, Falu. Actually, she's a good friend now. I met her there, and she's an amazing Indian singer. And I don't remember much more. It was a classical singer, an opera singer, too. And it's like in a stage. So they start teaching them on the schools what they play, the different styles that they are bringing to the concert. So the whole year, the school year, they are listening. And it's funny how you got into the stage, the first concert, and it's like the movie star is coming because they've been listening about your music and your name the whole school year. So these kids are waiting for you to play some music for them. So I, of course, represent the Cuban music side on that show. And it's a beautiful. So we play the same theater, and we do two shows a day. They bring the schools to the theater. It's a beautiful thing. It's a very, very beautiful thing.
That is so, really exciting to work with children.
From the Carnegie Hall. Yeah. Well, I don't particularly work with children because you need to have a special talent, really special talent to work with children. But as part of this program, it's the most beautiful thing to do to play for them.
Well, to me, that's working with children. I mean, it's because you have no idea the amount of kids that are listening to you and that you are going to encourage or somehow open up a love or a passion or a thought or just inspire them in some way. I'm sure that you will. So that is definitely working with children. Anytime that you are standing in front of an audience, whoever your audience is, they're listening to what you're doing, and oh my goodness, the music. One of the things about music that I've watched that just takes me to another level is, I don't know if you've seen this video on YouTube about a baby listening to, I think it's a classical song, And it's, and the baby just starts to cry. It's just a newborn baby. And that's the thing
about music,
that it doesn't matter how old we are, whether you understand it or not, whether it is, and sometimes it's better if there isn't any lyrics to it, because the music can actually touch you, and depending on your own experiences in life, it just gives you a different perspective.
Yes, definitely. It's something like, you know, it's like, for me, music is that. It's how I experience life. So it's, I don't know what would be my life without, not just music in general, but with the music that I do every day. I mean, I don't know. I have no idea what my life will be without my career. The fact that I translate my feelings through my instrument or my voice, and share that with the world. It's crazy to really actually think on it. You know, it's like, it's something that is, I don't know. It's to me, my life won't be worth it if I don't have music. You know.
What would you say is the message that you want to transmit through your music? If there was something that you want to leave behind for musicians, for lovers of music?
I want to share love all the way, you know, love for music, but love for each other, love for the others, love for the different people, and that translating to respect and compassion, but and all the way that compassion has, you know, like not just like, because I feel like if we, maybe that's my perception, being a Spanish speaker and the Spanish world, when we think in compassion, we think into it's like derogatory way, you know, because in the culture I grew up, when you feel compassion for somebody, you feel like you are in a one step above. So you can feel compassion. But I think that compassion is more than that. It's the love for everybody, no matter what. Doesn't matter what position or what title or how much money you have. We can all be equal.
Yeah.
And we should be treated equal. Each other.
And,
you know,
yes,
it's like when people talk to me about the religion thing, and I said, you know, I don't want to impose to anybody my beliefs because actually I like to embrace beliefs from different religions. And that's one of the things that I said when somebody tried to point me with a finger because of my religion. I said, I think I want to be the followers of Jesus Christ because he wants everybody to be treated the same. You know, he wanted opportunity for everybody to succeed. And to be loved. So I want that for everybody, even if I am not a Christian. Why wouldn't I like that for everybody? So with my music, I really would like to share that kind of love and the passion for doing the right thing.
And I think that no matter what religion you belong to or what culture you belong to, spirituality is all about love, and music is all about love. Music is about sharing the beauty and the skills of the sounds that the angels and the spirits have given us. Without them, how do we have talent? How can we speak? How can we even be animated to move and do the things that we do and have the brain that we have and create the things that we create as human beings? We have to thank some kind of a universal love that has given us the power to create. And we can all create in our own ways. God has given us all different gifts and talents. And it's just amazing.
Absolutely.
What you do and the people that you touch and the projects that you work with. I'm so glad that I reached out to you and that you said yes. We apologize for the little bit of issues that we had in the beginning. We're going to have Mr. Mann go ahead and edit the show. But before we go,
that was
it ended
part of
all...
that's the part of the spicy of the show.
That was part of. I'm sorry, I didn't hear you.
Of the show.
Oh, Gino. So before we go, the show ended, but we, like I said, we're going to go ahead and edit. And I wanted to go ahead and finish with a song. What do you want people to listen to just on the end of it all here?
Well, I think that for most of young and old Latinos and Cubans, of course, this song means a lot because we all hear our grandparents, our parents, and I hope my kids remember me at some point when they were older saying, my dad used to sing this. I would like to sing to play the song called Dos Gardenias.
I love that song. You know, my dad was hopeless romantic, and one day we'll talk about my dad and his love for his religion and his love of music. But he used to sing this to my mother, and I remember him. I can't even speak. I'm so nervous about this. I remember him. I remember him. It just, you know, it's one of those songs where these old people are going to hear it, and they will be getting up off their chairs, and they will have tears in their eyes. And grandchildren and great-grandchildren will have memories of this song as well. So I'm so happy that you sent it to us, and thank you so much for being on the show this evening. Gino Castillo, Buena Vista Legacy Band, The Showcase. Muchas gracias, mi amigo.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much. Ache pa todo el mundo.
All right. Thank you. And I will leave the information below, so if anyone is interested, Carnegie Hall, anybody out in New Orleans, in Marco Island, we know there's people out there. You guys need talent. You guys need friends to play some music. December 31st is going to be a big, big year. 2021, we're all open. Let's give this guy a chance to make everybody happy. Come on, everybody. Dos gardenias. Go ahead, Mr. Mayor. We love you. Bye-bye, everybody.
Dos gardenias para ti, con ellas quiero decir, te quiero, te adoro, mi vida, ponles toda tu atención, que será tu corazón y el mío. Dos gardenias para ti, que tendrán todo el calor de un beso, de esos besos que te di que jamás encontrarás en el calor. A tu lado vivirá y te hablará como cuando estás conmigo. Y hasta creerá que te dirá, te quiero. Pero si un atardecer las gardenias de mi amor, es porque han adivinado que tu amor me ha traicionado, porque existe otro querer. tu lado vivirás. Y te hablarás como cuando estás conmigo. Y hasta creerás que te dirás. Pero si un atardecer las gardenias de mi amor se muere, es porque han adivinado que tu amor rechazado porque existe otro bien. Es porque han adivinado que tu amor me ha traicionado. Porque existe otro que...
Oh,